Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm in Mesa, Arizona, not too far from Phoenix, and the Scottsdale area. It's a beautiful day here in Arizona. We certainly send our hearts out to those who are dealing with much suffering this morning, not having such a great morning. It's hard to put a smile on your face when you're dealing with radiation and tsunamis and nuclear radiation waste and flooding, and certainly the civil violence, the civil war that's going on everywhere in the Middle East right now, it seems. So we send our hearts out and our love to them and pray for their peace, peace of mind and peace of heart. So we thank you so much for joining us this morning. This is wonderful to see so many people enjoying the show. It just continues to keep growing and growing and growing, over 16,000 listeners now. And we appreciate the listeners that come on live on Saturday morning, and we appreciate those that listen to our show through the week. That's one of the things I really like about internet radio. Is that you don't you don't really miss a show. You can always go back on and look for the date and listen to the show. You know, just like you were right there, sitting there, live on air with us. And also, the chat line is open for those of you who feel more comfortable just writing in some of the things you'd like to say as opposed to saying them on air. And because it is, it takes a little bit to open up and build that confidence to go on air, to speak to many people who may even dispute what you're saying. And if you're not used to that kind of interaction, listen to the show a few times, and so that you'll get that feeling tone. Hopefully, you'll get that feeling tone that everyone that calls in expresses a lot of love and respect for each other. And I found that time and time again, there's been no on the phone via confrontations, via chat or on the phone with any of the people that call in. They're very well aware of White Apple Institute's philosophy that love works, and it truly does. I don't think that there's anything else that works as well as love does. And for those of us that believe that love is God and God is love, by whatever name you choose to call God, we already know how to keep that that peacefulness going in our lives, and we strive for it. So when we talk about peacefulness, it brings us to a very another disturbing subject that we can't ignore discussing, and it's making such an impact on not only the young people today, but the future of our young people tomorrow. And some time ago, we did a show on behavior, and we were talking about how important it is to hear, for children to hear what you're saying when you're trying to discipline them. And that when they hear us saying, you know, don't do that, that means that we want them to stop. And they usually do because they know the consequences of doing that behavior are going to be great. However, when they're not around us and we don't see that, we don't hear that voice, then the only thing that we have in our reserves to pull out and say, okay, this is not the way we're supposed to do this, is how we see our world. Now, let me explain that a little bit better here. When we see people doing the things, especially the main people in our life, doing the very things that we're telling them are not acceptable, that's when you have this confusion going on. Very young in life, even at 2 years old, you'll find the confusion of seeing, take for instance, dad or mom picking up a cigarette and putting it in their mouth. And no matter how many times you tell the child not to do that, not to pick up a cigarette and put it in their mouth, as soon as they see you doing that, then they're duplicating that behavior. So I'm not saying don't smoke. I have no judgment on that or anything like that. I just want you to understand that when people or children observe our behavior, the observation makes more of an impact on their behavior than what we tell them. So we need to be, you know, careful of what we show them versus what we tell them. So what does that have to do with our subject today about school violence and students becoming shooters? And this is part one of four, and we're going to start with identifying shooters. You know, what is a shooter? Where do we think it comes from? What are the experts saying? But more importantly, when I say experts, those are supposedly people that have gone to school for a long time, read a lot of theories, designed a lot of theories. And remember, theories are just things we think are true. They're not necessarily the truth. And so we count on these experts to tell us their theories, but we need to recognize that they are theories. But we also need to feel confident enough to be engaged in talking about it among ourselves or on a show like this show. And that's by calling in at 1, dialing 1 first, and then the number 646-727-3758, and join our discussion this morning, as we'll have others joining us throughout the show. So, you know, this violence, where does it begin? It starts in various places, but we have to all agree that because of what I was saying earlier, that the child, no matter how much, and I've heard people say this, you know, I'll spank that child and I'll whip that child until he gets it or she gets it. And, you know, I understand their method of trying to change the behavior, but behavior doesn't change outside and inside at the same time. Behavior changes when the inside behavior changes first, and then the outside behavior follows along with it. So whatever the person is feeling inside about whether this is right behavior, or is this something Jesus would do, or is this something that God would be happy about, when we start thinking about how to look at that behavior, then the outside behavior begins to change, and we become very happy about the outside behavior. And we all want the outside behavior to change. That's our goal. Good morning. This is Professor Applebaum, and who's online here?
Good morning. Consuelo Aceves.
Professor Estete, always good to hear your voice. Always good to hear your voice.
Thanks.
We have some other callers right now, but they're asking to be on mute. So we're going to keep them on mute. And so right now you're the only live caller on. And
okay.
Let's check the line and make sure that there's no one on chat that has submitted a comment. And I don't think so. And so we're fine with that. But feel free, listeners out there, to submit a comment whenever you feel comfortable enough to do that, or to call in to 646-727-758. Professor Stepney, we're talking today about violence in the schools. And what I was leaving this at right now is the cycle. I'm going to talk about the cycle of family violence. And most importantly, I think we need to look at what scientific theories have brought out, and even empirical evidence, evidence that has been proven by a scientist by the name of Albert Bandura. He proved by a series of experiments that children will do will duplicate the behavior they see more than the behavior that they hear that they shouldn't do. Does that make sense? If they see a behavior, and I was giving the example of seeing a parent smoking a cigarette, and that the child will pick up the cigarette more quickly by seeing the parent do it than by actually hearing the parent say no. But and that's in front of the parent. So that's the kind of behavior that we're talking right now, is what children see and what leads to this violent behavior that we're seeing that plays out more as adults, adult learners, in adult environments. So you're joining today, all of us calling in and all of us that are listening to the show at different times and in different places all over the world, and we certainly appreciate that. Our friends in India at the orphanage, we truly appreciate your interest in our show. We certainly appreciate some of the teachers that have called in from China. We give them our greatest thank you. We had we spoke with some people in Haiti in discussion of their schools and special ed programs, and we pray that they will continue to keep building and acknowledging that people who have so-called disabilities do have the ability to take care of themselves if we build the right programs. And so there's a lot going on in the world that we need to be thankful for that's happening. And we need to also be aware that we are all in the same boat together. And if for one reason you think that you're not in the same boat as those that are in Japan or in Egypt right now, I'm so sorry that you feel that you are not part of the same planetary boat, because we are all in the same boat together. And as we're in that boat and the behavior is there, we're going to usually follow suit and continue with the behavior. And that's what this violence is all about. When we talk about school violence, there's a reason why that starts. Okay, especially at the rate that we're talking about now. I mean, this is a very dangerous rate, and people are actually dying because of it. I mean, there's always been man, human beings. I'm not just speaking of men, so don't jump on me, my male listeners out there. I'm saying that humanity always has that one part of themselves, that aggression is definitely a part of behavior, and that goes for women too. But where aggression gets to the point where people are being killed, and these are young people who are killing young and older people, students that they don't even know. There's another science that's happening here, and we need to be aware of that. So you're joining us today to take an intense look at violence on high school and college campuses. And we've invited some experts to discuss methods to identify, to increase the understanding of the effect on teachers, as well as student privacy issues that a lot of us are not aware of, and reduce this increasing phenomenon of school violence by looking at, as I said earlier, the background that is creating this violent and aggression, these aggression issues. And I'd like to also, if we have time, to touch on a little bit about the gun laws and share some insight on mental health and Privacy Act issues, because a lot of people are not aware of why, because they're asking me even right now, you know, why can't the government just go in when they see that a child is having behavioral problems early in life and go in and identify that student and then and watch them so that they basically mark them. And that's because we have fought so long and hard for privacy issues to protect people from being looked at and marked like that. So we'll talk a little bit about that if we have some time. If not, remember this is part one of four, so we'll have a little time in the next few weeks to bring those discussions back again. We also want to make sure that we don't forget that these issues are surrounding the students who have become shooters. They have become the shooters, the killers, and also victims, because sometimes after they do this act of killing others, they're also killing themselves. So this becomes a very sad act around, and we wish you much love and peace as we go through this discussion. And anytime that you feel comfortable to express what you're feeling, please jump in and make yourself known. It's not an interruption. And fortunately, in our American culture, we do accept that kind of intervention is more what we call it versus interruption. It's intervention. It keeps the ball going. You'll see it on the Oprah Show and Montel Williams and any of the other shows out there. You'll see where people just will jump in and say what they need to say, as politely as they can do that. So let's begin by just talking a little bit about the cycle of family violence. Since we started off talking about the cycle being associated with adults or adult caregivers, whoever's taking care of the child, it's like this. Do you believe that adults who, as children, were abused by their parents, are they less likely to inflict abuse on their own children than are other adults? Are they less likely if they've been surrounded by abuse? What do you think about that, Professor Estete? Do you think that has something to do with it?
Professor Apple, we're having a little difficulty hearing.
Okay. Let me fix this.
So yes. I would like you to repeat again the statement about taking care of students.
Sure. Can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Can you hear me better now? Is that much better? Good. Okay, let me try that again. What we were talking about is the factor that we are aware that children observe behavior, and they follow what they observe their parents do more than they follow doing what their parents do just because their parents say don't do it. they watch their parents. And the example that I gave earlier, for those listeners that have hung in there, listen again once more, because I hope that this will be a point that will stick in your head, is that if a child sees you smoke, you can tell the child over and over again, don't ever smoke cigarettes. But you may many times find the child duplicating that same behavior and putting a cigarette in their mouth, even if it's not lit, okay? And they'll do that until they don't see you doing that anymore, because they are committed to following your example, because observation is the best teacher. And so my question is, if you agree with that statement, is it true that adults who create this violence on college campuses, could it be true that they have had a lot of abuse in their life, and that is the reason why they act the way they do and inflict abuse on their own children and other people? Could that be?
Definitely, I think that would be a factor.
Uh-huh.
It would be a factor.
Well, it could be a factor, and I agree with that. It could be a factor of, you know, and we talk about the different things, different variables that can happen that can impact one statement. So you could have one statement about a behavior and then have different factors or different issues around it. Interestingly enough, the question is false. According to researchers, they're saying that just because a parent has been abused, and they've been abused by their own parents, they are not less likely, they are more likely, and that's what you're saying, as a matter of fact, that they're more likely to inflict abuse on their own children. Okay, and so you're right in that sense. Is that because they've seen aggression, they've seen violence in their own home, so if they've seen it, they don't have to be taught how to be violent because it's been observed. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes. So if anybody that observes behavior, you know, children who witness parental violence or who are abused are more likely as adults to inflict abuse on their own relationships with people, okay, or they become victims. You know, and this is research done by, there's a number of people I can name. One of the most famous ones is, I want to give credit to Hyman and Stepp. In 2002, they wrote this theory out. And also Brems and Namignuk in 2002. So I just wanted to mention their names as those that have done some really good research in this area. And I hope some of the teachers that are listening out there to this broadcast are getting a really good idea that when you listen to this show, we will try our best not to overwhelm you with scientific evidence, but to try to balance it so that we make sure that everybody gets a little bit of the science of being the teacher and also the science of being the student. Since we are all student and teachers at different times. That's why the show is called Student to Teacher, Professor Assetti.
Yes.
You know, and in turn, it's interesting that the children that are abused are more likely to even interact violently with other children. And you'll see this if you watch them playing early in life. You'll see this if you look at their school record, that they've always been in fights with others, okay? And the factor that grandmothers and grandfathers, even from different generations, You know, here they are, you know, 70 years old, and they're still fighting. They're still showing the children that fighting and violence is the way to solve problems. And that's sad.
It's sad.
Yeah.
Very sad.
And so this is one of the reasons why we have, you know, and I think that it's a good place to start when we start trying to figure out why do we have this violence on campus. And parents have to start stepping up and taking some responsibility for this.
Yeah. We have to educate the parents.
We have to educate them, educate the parent about these things. But, you know, what I found personally in my travels, and I don't know if you have much confrontation with parents, we're not supposed to. at the college and university level, we're not supposed to have a lot of interaction with parents about grades and about behavior, and that's because of the Privacy Act that I'll be discussing throughout this series. And they get very, very angry, especially with me as a counselor, because I won't show them their grades and I won't show them what's going on in the classroom like you would get that kind of attention when you're in elementary school, K through 12. But once you're out of 12th grade and you're in college in the Western civilization and European systems, we don't allow them to look at the school records unless the student gives them permission. The student must give them permission. Isn't that interesting?
Well, yes. And I think, may I say something, Professor Apple? It's also because of the fact that a college student is usually on his own. College student is paying for his own education. He's working. He's independent from family, from parents. But in other countries, you know, the parents are paying their education, so they have a say in everything that happens in the university student's life. Because, and they also know his parents are paying for her education, so they have to be accountable to someone. And so that would be a different, very interesting difference because more affluent, you know, and so-called more advanced society.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you. This is going to be really surprising to you. But no matter how affluent they are, unless of course it's bribery or something like that. But as far as going into a college university and demanding to see the records because you paid a bill, it won't even work.
No, but it doesn't happen that way. It happens between the student and the parent.
The student
and voluntarily submits and is accountable to his parents without having the parents have to go to the university. It's a different, completely different setup.
And, you know, I ask the students many times, you know, have you showed your father your last statement, you know, your last grade record? And they'll say no. And the father will be in the office with me saying, well, I want you to provide it. And I'm sitting there like, I cannot provide it. I cannot give as a counselor, as a representative of the college, and someone who has to protect the students with the Privacy Act. I cannot physically pull the record down of that student and give it to the parent. But the student can request for me to do that, and I can do it in a minute without any problem. We have the form for that where they can actually say, I give my parent permission or my minister or whatever the permission to look at my school record. So it is possible, but the student has to sign for it. Isn't that something? That is the legal way.
to this country. And it's interesting because, as you say, the parents are paying for the education, so why shouldn't they be able to come in at any time and see what's going on with their child in school, and even though the child is an adult now. But it just doesn't work that way, according to the law, you know. And it makes the parents very upset, and it makes the students feel like, well, do you trust me? I tell you that I'm doing okay. That should be enough. But as we can see, there's other things going on. Now, when you talk about when you go back to school violence, many of the students that commit this school violence and are in trouble because of their aggression on campus, they usually have pretty good grades. Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Yeah. It's really rare that you find someone being aggressive. Now, we don't have any real data on this, but it just seems across the board that we keep running into students that are very smart academically and that have a large file on their behavior in this disabled student office. So we can keep a record, but we just can't show anybody the record. So I say, what are we keeping it for? What is it good for, you know? So that's what we did with this last guy in Tucson, you know, the one who shot the professor there. But look, not a professor, she was a state representative, right? Gifford.
Yes.
Yeah, she was a state representative. And he shot her, not because he even knew her, but because he made a gamble somewhere with somebody that he was going to kill her. And in addition to that, because wherever that came from, the adrenaline rush, he killed a lot of other people, including a 9-year-old child,
that
lays in her grave today. Because of his act, that one single act of violence, just to prove something. And who knows better about how that works and what's going on in the mind but the person who produced it. In other words, he's the one who basically encouraged that student to go out and hurt somebody. He didn't discourage him. So it could have been a friend. Or it could have even been a movie. How about movies today?
I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
So
why are you
violence?
So sure? Yes.
Because of the violence that is shown in the movies. Not only that, in games, you know, the video games. The other day I went to visit a friend. Her 10-year-old was engaged in this interactive video. I don't know what they are called. Where the whole goal of the game was just to kill people. Kill, 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 kill. And that was a Christmas present that his parents gave him. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. Yes.
At least, you know, before when we did not have all this technology, I remember the little children play soldiers with a small soldiers. They would put them on the floor and then, you know, pretend they're shooting. But that was a little more innocent than what you have now that is so real, because you're almost inside the game yourself, and you're pulling
mm-hmm.
the trigger the whole time. You're in control of the whole thing.
Yes, yes, exactly. And what makes it even worse is that sometimes the parents are sitting there playing the games with the child. And, you know, even with my own grandchildren, I'm very careful when they're with me. But I notice that, you know, when I speak to my own children about why they watch or do the games that they do, I mean, they try their best to censor them However, they can only censor so much. Because once they leave them, they go to school and everybody's talking about them. Kids are bringing in the iPods and showing these horrible games. I don't know what's happened recently to the one where the guy's spinal cord actually gets ripped out from his back, and it's just dangling there. You know, and this is a game that even though they market mature, you know, it's still, even though they market mature, people, what is mature? I don't think any of it is mature, but then that's my personal opinion, okay?
Yeah.
I think with maturity, you have responsibility to look at how that's going to affect someone later on in life, you know?
Yeah.
We have a comment here, Mr. I think it's Mr. Newitt, and we thank you very much for commenting on our chat line. He is saying, and I'm just trying to get back to you too, Mr. Newitt or Mrs. Newitt, to say you made a point that school violence is an issue, that too many people take violence as part of growing up, and that's true, that's just what we're saying. And the child being targeted is told to be strong and it will be better, especially when we're talking about bullying. And then they also write that violence should never be accepted, never be accepted. And I have to totally agree with that because, you know, I'm totally into peace. And so I think that everything can be handled in a peaceful way. I don't even like to kill bugs, but maybe I take it a little too far with that. Okay, I try to move them out of the house, but if I can't, then I have to smash them, and I hate to do that. But, you know, so that's the kind of peace that I like them to make in my life happen. But you're very right, Mr. Noah, on our chat line, that violence should never be accepted. And the one who initiates violence should be sent home with the very first incident. I think that's very important what this person is saying, Professor Estete, and thank you, Mr. Noah, you're really, really giving us some good ideas here. Thank you for your comments. And also, they say that when the young child becomes a young adult, the buildup is so great that it is a way of life. It becomes a way of life. And exactly what we're saying with this circle of violence, cycle of that family violence. And they bring out that no child nor young adult in college should have to be there being harassed. And I can tell you for sure that Professor Estete agrees with you that no one should be harassed, especially the teachers even, that the learning institutes are a place for learning to better our lives. And we can't better our lives if we're constantly trying our best to fight off all of the negative forces and the aggressive forces there. Okay?
That's right.
I'll read one more comment here that just came in. Could you see yourself on your job daily dealing with violent situations? Would you continue going to work to make a living under the threat of violence? Well, unfortunately, this is hard to say, but we deal with violent work issues also. And there's a lot of violence at work. We've cut down a lot on it, and we need to look at that example, because I know you remember, Professor Estete, we had a real rash of violence for a long time with postal workers. And they were coming in and they were shooting up the whole postal office. Do you remember that?
Yes, I remember.
And that was some time ago. And it did become, violence on the job was very, very, unfortunately, it was somewhat acceptable until new laws went into place about harassment and what sexual harassment really was. And that included harassment on all issues, okay? Harassment not only by commenting on someone's sexual prowess or looks, but also on, you know, how well they do their job or how well they didn't do their job, and threatening them. And this, again, this type of behavior goes back to what did the child see as he was growing up? And I have some really good news for you about this. We're not going to just stop here and say, okay, well, that's it. We just discussed a little bit of it, and that should take care of it. No, we're not going to do that. White Apple Institute won't allow us to do that. We have to make sure that we truly understand what is bringing the elephant into the living room that no one wants to talk about. And when I say that, for those of our foreign students who are listening, it's an expression that says that if you have something that is right there in front of you, but you don't want to talk about it because everybody's too embarrassed to talk about it, and it hurts too bad, it's too painful, that is a very sad situation. And that is where you get people being very closed and very withdrawn. And so when you feel that, you take your aggression out on in other ways. And one of them is bullying. One of them is taking somebody's lunch money and watching them cry, okay, and not have any and developing where you don't have any feelings for anybody. You can say things to teachers and walk away and not have any feelings on whatsoever. I remember once, as a matter of fact, this teacher was from China, and she was telling me that she found it so rare that the students don't say thank you here. You know, our students don't say thank you, and they're, and she said in China, the students are always saying thank you. You know, so that's another, you know, area we need to look at is, because I notice it. I don't know if you notice it. As customer service has gone down the hill in this country. You know, there's very, very few people that really say, good morning, how are you, and mean it. You know, they say it, but they expect you just to say fine, and you go on with your life. They don't want to hear that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I wanted to ask you a question. Are you referring to customer service in general?
Yes.
Because there is a difference. If it's a private business, they will bend over backwards for the client.
Mm-hmm.
Private
sometimes.
Business. Yeah,
sometimes,
but
and you're right.
If it's public business, government business, they don't do very well. So that's the difference. Can you please, Professor Apple, reconcile this comment with the main idea that you were elaborating about? Hello?
Walk into a government agency and I find someone there who's very nice and willing to help, I'm very surprised, okay? Because most of the time I'm feeling a lot of aggression and I'm feeling a lot of fear. People are afraid of opening up and saying anything to anybody. We live in an age where the information age, if you say the wrong thing to somebody, they can pick up a lot of information from you. And they can, if it fits into what they need, they can start researching you, and before you know it, your wallet's gone, you know, and, you know, it's just pitiful. Your wallet's gone. Your identity's gone. And it's very sad. In education, can you hear me all right? Hello? I think I just muted you, and I didn't mean to do that. Okay.
A few seconds. I have to dial.
Okay, no, you're on air now. You're on air. You're okay.
Okay.
All right. We have about 14 minutes remaining. We certainly hope that more people will either communicate on the chat line or call in before the show is over to 646-727-3758. This is a student-to-teacher show. But what I wanted to say, Professor Estete, is that you're absolutely right in your comment. And I would like to see more of it in the field of education, because even though education is truly a private industry, we are funded federally, but we compete for students. And when it's truly government, there's no competition. Do you know what I mean?
True.
But the community colleges and even the universities have to come up with innovative ways to recruit students over to them. And so in doing that, they need to be they need to have good fraternities and lots of activities and good professors. And now they have school pamphlets that talk about how they take care of the violence on campus.
Wow.
You see, so that's now a new thing, and that's important to parents now, is how are you addressing the violence on the campus? Because I don't want my daughter or my son going to a school that doesn't have a good security program to address these students who have become shooters. I want to know, how are you doing that? Are you going out? Are you checking your classrooms? Do you have metal detectors? You know, these are important points. You know, do you have cameras to watch the classrooms? A good security system. You know, if you think about all the horrible things that have happened, if they had a camera in the cafeterias, because a lot of times they were in the cafeteria or in the library even when these things took place since Columbine. You familiar with Columbine?
Yes.
Yes. And if they had pictures of what went on there from the very beginning, they could have dispatched the police immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't have that kind of technology. And you know, where it stands right now is we need that type of technology.
Mm-hmm.
And with 11 minutes remaining, I just want to say this also and get your comment on this, okay? We talked a little bit about the laws, and I want people to understand the laws are truly within each state. Each state, you know, has their own law about guns. And good morning. I think this is a board member calling in. Hello, how are you?
Yeah, this is Tom. I remember Columbine.
Hello,
that was a long
Columbine,
time ago.
Yes. Yes, it seems like a long time ago, but, you know, for many of us that are looking at the television and seeing just the recent shooting in Tucson, it brings it all back for us.
Yeah,
of what
really
Columbine
does.
Was, you know, and so the fear begins with the teachers again, and the fear begins with the students. So it never leaves you, that kind of fear.
Yeah.
Even if you weren't right there in the cafeteria, don't you agree?
Remember? Yeah, that's true. In Penn State, you remember that?
Yes.
Where the student was shot down, and there's a professor at Penn State that got shot down in that home mess there.
That's right.
Protest.
Anything else you wanted to say on on school violence? And we're just ending up now. We didn't get a chance to go through everything that we wanted to go through this morning. And we had a really great person to come on chat this morning and share some great ideas with us. I just want to know if you had anything you wanted to add to aggression and violence. And we were talking about that we think that parents have a large part to do with demonstrating violence early in someone's childhood.
Oh, yeah,
they learn
do.
This aggression.
You learn
do you agree
the aggression?
With that?
I've taught daycare center. I've seen kids stomp on other kids' legs when they're 5 years old. You know they're not getting it all from TV. I mean, some of it's coming from parodying and parenting, and then they get the reward for it. I mean, they get paid attention to, it's just violence is getting out of hand. You know,
it is.
You know, I remember driving. Go ahead.
I just wanted to comment that when you saw the children filming the children being beaten and killed, an honor student in Chicago, I think it was Chicago or Detroit, because we did
right.
a whole show on that. But that was pretty bad to see other children. Professor Stette, I don't know if you remember that. That situation.
I don't remember.
Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Yeah, now that's really sad when you see other children using their telephones and the video part of their telephones to actually. No one called 911. They were just watching this child being beaten that was not a gang member. And with just a few moments left, I just want to give credit to our chat person this morning. We have two chat people this morning that have said some very interesting things. And I acknowledge what you said about and appreciate it, that she's saying that teachers should feel they can teach without being careful about offending a violent student. If we all do more before a major incident, we can rid our culture of violence, and that violence is acceptable in our culture itself. That's right, Professor Etsete. You said earlier about the games itself. Our TV channels should all have on staff visible daily staff who are experts and know what to tell the public about violence. And these are great ideas. And also, I appreciate you saying, what a nice compliment. This person is saying that they should have more people like myself and our listeners to go on major network television and talk about these issues. Thank you for the comment and for the compliment there. We certainly hope that there will be major networks that will pick us up and sponsor us so that we can get this work out. Because one of the things that you're going to hear as we go along is the horror that's happening to people with disabilities that are being subjected to violence. And that when all of this shooting is going on, especially those in wheelchairs and with mental health issues, it's affecting them greatly. And so we appreciate all the comments there that you've made today, and there will be a record kept. And I think they also answered one of the comments you made, Professor Stette, about government agencies have the same kind of people as private industries. The difference is in private industry, the bottom line is profit. You will smile and serve, or you will be gone. So that was one of the comments that were made. if you don't smile and serve them, then you'll be gone. And that's certainly for sure, unless you're kissing up to somebody. And but I totally agree that I think that, and that's one way to end this show this morning, is to agree that violence is unacceptable in our society, and we don't have to deal with that at all. And the question that's asked here is that cameras are a good tool. Cameras are for more than after the fact. Teachers in high schools especially should have young people who are preparing for their future. And violence limits all of our opportunities. And they want to know if we have any comment to share with them. Does college have assignments that group the students so students are not left out of the daily learning activities? Are there group activities? Anybody want to take that? Anybody new on the line want to take that?
Well, violence is just a horrible thing, and we need to stop it and stop it in its tracks. And I think more people need to be expelled when they're violent and
right.
things like that. There should be more punishment for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also, a lot of it's just TV. I mean, you watch TV and it's sex and violence. Those are your choices on TV. Sometimes
right.
if you're lucky, you get both. But most channels, it's either or.
You know, one of our listeners wrote in that that on the first incident that the child, the student, should be dealt with on the first incident. And usually our policy in education is that we don't do anything on the first incident. We usually let them slide, even on our court systems. One of the greatest defenses that attorneys have is saying that, well, this is the first offense. And so the judge supposedly goes a little lighter on them because it's the first offense. And what should happen is that the first offense should be the heaviest. Because I know even when you're training a dog, I have a new dog, and training the dog, the first incident of the dog doing anything is where I come down the heaviest on the dog, because I know that the dog has to learn that now. And if I don't teach that to the dog early, then it's lost. And I don't mean to compare our children in school with dogs, but I'm just making an example of the fact that we do have to deal with the first incident first. And so
yeah.
if those of you out there would like to nominate this show and what we're doing, they can contact CNN.com and write a short note on an application. They have an application there, a form where you can tell people about what we're doing in the communities around the world, and that would help a lot. Do you have something else, Todd Tom, you want to share with us?
Nothing I can think of.
Okay, Professor Seth, anything that you'd like to close with this morning?
Well, yes, to say that, again, to reaffirm that violence is unacceptable in any way, form, or shape. Absolutely unacceptable.
Uh-huh. Right. It is totally unacceptable. If we want to have a peaceful world, if we want to change what's going on right now. Now, next week we'll pick up more on this subject. I promise you that we'll start this where we left off. I'll go ahead and change the show description, and so that we can get more into the privacy issues and laws, gun laws, and why we cannot mark a child as an aggressive personality and let that follow them through school. So. The identifying the shooters, if you will, doesn't really work. I love all of you, and thank you so much for joining the student, the teacher, the student radio show on the internet this morning. And thank you for our chat discussions. Thank you for being there, and I wish you a peaceful and loving week. And we will see each other and talk together on next Saturday. And thank you so much again, and we'll give our thanks to Nazim Rashid and other sponsors who have come on board. And we thank them very much for all of the help that they've given us to keep the show going. Okay? So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we certainly thank Nazim Rashid for his great music here as we close the show. His album is available at Borders, Barnes & Noble's bookstore. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.